Hello, and welcome back to the Creator Spotlight podcast, the show focused on highlighting the very best of your favorite creators. On today's episode, Steve Fowler. Welcome, Steve. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very good. We just had a few fun minutes of some technical difficulties, which they always come up, so not too bad. But yeah, welcome to the podcast. It's nice to have you here.
Great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
That's all right. So for people who are not too sure about who you are and sort of what you do, do you want to give us a sort of elevator pitch of who you are and what you do?
Yep. So I am an automotive editor who has been in this business for over 30 years. I'm the only person who's edited three of the UK's biggest automotive titles. So most recently, until just a couple of weeks ago, I was editor of Auto Express, as well as being editorial director of the Autovia business, which covers Evo, car buyer, driving electric, driver power. There's also Octane and Car Throttle. So I spent 12 and a half years in that business. And before that, I was at Haymarket Publishing, where I was editor-in-chief of Whatcar and also editor of Autocar as well. So I've done three of the biggest titles, automotive titles in the UK.
Yeah, it's a pretty extensive sort of history as well. It must be, I'd imagine things have changed a heck of a lot in just even the last 5 years, possibly, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm very, very lucky to be working in the automotive industry right now, because everybody says you're going to see more change over the next 10 years than we've seen in the previous 120 odd years. It really is a period of change, not only in terms of the technologies and the vehicles and how they're sold as well, but from a media perspective. You know, I started out back in 1993 doing the data pages in the back of Whatcar magazine. And while that's still going and the data pages are still there, you know, these days they're digital businesses first and foremost. You know, it's a digital world that we live in.
Yeah, 100%, definitely. If I just want to sort of dive back a little bit, from the very, very start, what got you interested in doing motoring journalism to start with? Because I'd imagine, well, obviously, now we mentioned digital media and things, it's a lot easier for anyone to get into it. You can just spring up a YouTube channel or make your website and you can get started if you wanted. But back in the early days, it was very much sort of had to, I'd imagine, sort of fight your way forward and sort of get yourself known a little bit. But what sort of inspired you to get started in it initially?
Well, it was a number of things, really. I mean, I had a strange career into journalism. I left school when I was 16 and went to work for an insurance company called Eagle Star Insurance, which is long gone or long consumed by another company, and did, I think, 6 years there. But I wanted to be an actor, so I left and went to drama school and was accepted into one of the big drama schools at the time, Webber Douglas. Didn't last very long there. Soon realised that most actors work in pizza restaurants, no matter how good you are. And it was actually a guy who I do need to contact at some stage and tell him that he's responsible for much of my career, a guy called Miles Ross, who is actually Jonathan Ross's brother, who told me that if I wanted to get into TV, because I was looking to get into TV at the time, get in through journalism and specialise in something that you know. And he said, what do you know and what do you like? I'm a big car fan, I know everything about cars. So he said, well, try and get into automotive journalism. So as you quite rightly say, you know, my advice to people these days who want to get into automotive journalism is to build yourself a website, get yourself a YouTube channel, start creating your own content to sort of mark yourself out as being different from those people who don't bother. But in those days, it was about writing letters, those old things, to all the editors of all the major motoring magazines, just asking for some work experience. I was ignored by most, some of whom contacted me when I was an editor asking for work. You don't forget those things. One guy, a guy called Mark Payton, who was managing editor of Whatcar, invited me in to do some work experience on Whatcar back in 1993. And I hung around. They obviously thought I was okay and wasn't a mad axe murderer. And as and when the sort of the next job came available, which was editing the data section, then they gave me the job.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. And then you were at Whatcar for how long?
In total, I was at Haymarket for 17 years, and Haymarket's still going strong. What car's still going strong?
Oh yeah.
I edited Autocar for the best part of 2 years, as a short period within that, but then went back onto What Car. So, best known for sort of turning What Car into, what we know and love today, really. It's one of the biggest, strongest automotive brands that's there to help people buy the right car at the right price. And very much part of the digital transformation, taking it from the magazine that was into a real digital powerhouse.
Yeah, definitely. It's difficult for me to imagine because I sort of grew up watching YouTube, if that makes sense. But at what point, it, sort of the decisions that were made in the back room, did that YouTube start to become more taken seriously, rather than like a little social media network that maybe some kids were messing around on? Until, if you get what I mean, like until it become more sensible.
Yeah, that's an interesting point because YouTube is a very big and important part of our lives. But as a business, it is quite difficult to make serious money from YouTube. You've got to have a huge following, and even then, YouTube is going to get richer than anybody else on YouTube. But it's an important part of the mix, and very soon it became very apparent that the video content was something that we needed on our website. And YouTube is great at hosting that. YouTube is a great shop window for your talents as much as anything else. So YouTube is a difficult thing to make money out of as a decent sized publishing business. For a while, as Autovia and Dennis before that, we owned a fantastic business called Car Throttle, which had some real talent, the likes of Alex Kirsten, who's gone on to fantastic things.
Okay,
Ethan
great.
Smale, Jack Joy, and Edwin as well, who's got his own channel now. Car Throttle was great. I'm not sure that a business like Car Throttle, which thrives, some a lot of these YouTube channels do really well as little businesses that the guys pretty much run them themselves, put it into a big box, a bigger business, and it's more difficult for it to make money once it has other overheads put onto it. YouTube works really well if you've got huge scale, and there's not that many channels that have huge scale, or you've got decent scale and really low overheads. It's a very important part of the mix, it kind of feels as though we've always been doing that. But clearly there was a point when YouTube wasn't part of the automotive mix at all. But it's now just part of the furniture and something that we have to embrace.
Yeah, it's interesting. Especially with some of the channels that sort of seemingly come out of nowhere, possibly, that are just sort of massively popular, like you mentioned, what Alex and the other guys are doing. It's just so impressive, the sort of the professionalism they do, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm really proud of those guys. They've done a fantastic job out on their own, and I really, really enjoy their content. The thing about YouTube as well is it's hard work. It's a slog. You've got to keep on it, you can't go dark for a period of time. You've got to keep producing content every week or a few times a week. That's what the audience demands. That's what YouTube demands and what YouTube's algorithms demand. You've got to keep producing the content to a high standard, and it's difficult, and only the best survive. Now, there's no end of content out there. There's some real dross, if we're perfectly honest, isn't there? But there's some fantastic stuff, and the talented guys like Alex and Ethan and Jack and Edwin, they will always do well because they're brilliant at it.
Yeah, 100%. Just want to dive back into sort of what life's been like for you personally, at the moment. So you left Auto Express about a few weeks ago. So what are you up to now? I understand you're freelance mainly at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, this is as we speak, this is week two, so it's a bit early. Week one was fantastic because I was lucky enough to present a BBC Radio 4 documentary, so that was a nice thing to do, which has gone down very, very well, not only with Radio 4 and the audience, but people within the industry have been very, very complimentary about it. So hopefully there's more of that stuff to come.
That's good.
But at the moment, it's I was fully focused on Auto Express until the day I left. And it's difficult to start building a freelance career when you're in a full-time job. So now it's about, there's a fair bit of work coming in, which is keeping me busy. Let's put it this way. I'm sat at my desk pretty much all day, every day, in a freelance capacity, in the same way that I was when I was working. So I'm very busy, lots of really interesting conversations. The bottom line is, I'll be creating content still. Starting to do a little bit of stuff with a good friend of mine, Ginny Buckley, with electrifying.com, which I'm extremely proud of what she's done there, because I've worked with Ginny and known her for many, many years, and that's brilliant. So I've been doing a few stories, and I'm going to be helping them out with a bit of advice. Not that she needs too much, because she's doing brilliantly. But lots of other things. I've just literally got back from Germany as well. I was in Germany yesterday. At a car design event, which was a really useful thing to do. So there's lots of stuff happening, and all these people that said, just take a little bit of time, just take a rest, take a break. Yeah, that ain't exactly happening yet.
Fair enough. Are we going to see you on YouTube at all anytime soon? Because I know you did some YouTube stuff here and there for Auto Express. Is that something you want to delve into, or?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'll probably do some videos. Will I set up my own channel? I mean, bluntly, at the moment, I don't really have time.
Yeah, it takes a lot of
And
time, but
I think it does take an awful lot of time up. And so generally, I don't really have the time at the moment. I'd love to. I get some nice comments. The stuff I do on YouTube. I also get people saying you're just a fat Piers Morgan, which I think was a little bit harsh. I mean, Piers Morgan, I know I'm a big chap, that's fine, but Piers Morgan, really? Who knows? There's all sorts of opportunities, but I'm well aware of the importance of a video, and it'll certainly play a mix in my future.
Yeah, it's interesting stuff. Yeah, I started doing YouTube car reviews in June last year. It takes up so much time. It's a massive learning curve. And just yeah, but it's really exciting at the same time. I mean, there's all sorts of things you can do creative wise and editing and the way you film stuff, and yeah, it's exciting. So
Yeah, I think the important thing is to find your own little niche, find your own way, and have a point of difference. I mean, the gold standard is my former colleague Matt Watson, who does some brilliant videos. He's a great presenter, and he does some stuff, and he's found his niche, the drag races and everything else he does. But you've got to say, there are no end of videos out there. There are no end of people standing in front of cars saying, "This is the new XYZ." But you just got to try and make it more engaging and different, and find something that marks you out as being special and a reason why people want to watch you. Whether it's, I can always remember talking to James Batchelor, who does a lot of stuff on video. He used to do some stuff for us, and telling him to sort of play up his own natural presenting style, and what he called the batch match, matching the color of the car to the color of his trousers. But you've got to find your own little way, that is you and that people like. The other thing that's important that the drama school always taught me is to accentuate things. Now, clearly nobody likes anybody that overacts, but when you think you're being crazy and waving your arms around and your voice is going all over the place, that can quite often just sound like you standing in front of a camera sounding really dull. So my advice is always to be your own worst critic. Watch the stuff that you do, and you will very quickly be able to compare it to the best out there and whether you're good enough.
Yes, that's good advice, to be honest. Yeah. I just want to delve into some car industry stuff and sort of how certain topics are reported on. So at the moment we're seeing I understand you're quite a big fan of electric cars, or
I enjoy an electric car. I think fan is an interesting word, but
Yeah,
yeah,
okay. Yeah.
I enjoy. I think they get a bad rap at the moment.
Yeah. I've always been interested, so I'd imagine some of the listeners are quite interested as well, but where the source of some of the negativity comes from, do you think, as someone who's been in that industry for a while, do you think it comes from like rumors that are sp I don't I I'm just interested to see what you think.
Yeah, well, it's a lack of understanding. basically. But unfortunately, there seems to be, the phrase clickbait springs to mind. There is a lot of web traffic about negative stories around electric cars, which mean a lot of the mainstream media go looking for that sort of traffic, and publish stories that bluntly are incorrect. There's some of the things that they say about electric cars. Oh, they all burst into flames. Well, yeah, we've had a few fire issues, and dealing with a fire in an electric car has its challenges. But I think Elon Musk said, "Where would you rather be sitting? Would you rather be sitting on a car with a load of batteries underneath, or a car with a big tank full of very combustible fuel?" They don't all burst into flames. Yes, there was a fire on a ship with some electric cars on board, but there are fires on ships with cars with internal combustion engines, I would say, considerably more often. That doesn't get reported on.
No.
The fire at Luton Airport, the car park. I was at an event and people saying, "Yeah, that was an electric car. That was an electric car, wasn't it?" I mean, it's just how people start talking and things become fact, but they're not. It was not an electric car. So yeah, I think there is a bit of a groundswell of anti-EV rhetoric, which is just based on stuff that is untrue. I think it's a great shame. I think, to be perfectly honest, we are being pushed into an electric world by legislators. The legislators then sort of rowed back on their promises. It was 2030. Oh, it's 2035 now. We want you to buy electric cars. We're not going to help you buy electric cars. We're not going to incentivize them at all. We're going to have a stick that we're going to sort of wave in front of the car makers and tell them that they've got to sell a certain number of electric cars every year, otherwise we're going to fine them. But we're not going to help them sell those cars. They've just got to do it themselves. There is, I think it's the whole process of being badly managed by legislators. And the other thing is, it's very clear electric cars are not for everybody. If you drive the length and breadth of the country, then probably, dare I say, a diesel might be a good option for you still. And modern diesels are still rather clean. But by the time it comes to 2035, when the current plan is to outlaw internal combustion engines for brand new vehicles sold, I have every faith and confidence that electric cars are going to be up to the mark. You're going to be able to travel hundreds of miles, 400 or 500 miles on a single charge. You're going to be able to charge them up quickly. The infrastructure is going to be in place. That means you're not going to suffer that sort of woe of, oh, is there going to be a charging point? Is it going to be working? Is somebody else going to be plugged in? We'll be in a much better place then. Everybody doesn't have to buy an electric car right now. If they're buying new in over 10 years' time, they will have to buy an electric car because there won't be any other option. They don't have to buy them now. They do make a lot of sense for a lot of people. They're really, really enjoyable to drive. That combination of quietness and performance and everything. I take it you've probably driven a few. It is a nice experience, but it's not for everybody. And nobody says it is for everybody. But the thing I would encourage people to do is just to think about their usage, think about how they're going to be using a car, what the costs are associated with a car. And it may be that an electric car makes sense. And if you're the sort of person, as plenty of people do, have multi-car families, maybe an electric car is one of those cars. It certainly could be for my household. But it's not for everybody, but buying a car ain't easy. As I always say, it's very easy to buy a car badly. It's very difficult to buy a car well. You've got to put a bit of thought and a bit of effort into it to make sure you get the right car for you. And for a lot of people, that might be an electric car, but it might not. From my point of view, no pressure. I'll just help you buy the right car for you at the right price, whether that's electric or diesel or petrol or plug-in hybrid or whatever. I think getting back to your original point, sorry, I've given you a very long answer to a very short question. There's a lot of unfair negativity and misinformation around electric cars.
Yeah, and then also, I'd imagine some publishing houses have a better policy on whether or not they should report on different things and how true it is as well. And obviously, some of the newspapers and stuff that obviously I'd imagine there's probably, well, from what I can see, there's probably less thought gone into what's being said, just if it makes any sense.
Yeah, I don't know what the editorial policies are of the newspapers that are reporting on this, but what I do know is they're hungry for traffic. And if there's a simple way to get traffic, and that's writing negative stories about electric cars, then there's obviously some pressure to do it because that's what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Whether that's they're writing the right stuff or not, you know, that's down to them and their editorial policies. But I can tell you there's a lot of stuff that some of the major publishing newspapers in the UK are publishing about electric cars, which is just plain wrong. And my view is, as a journalist, you should always be truthful and publishing correct information and not misleading people. And I think there's a bit of that going on.
Yeah, I think you're right. And just getting back to what you said during the answer you gave. People don't have to buy them just yet. We've got a long way to go. And then what I always look back at is I've always went back on YouTube and watched some videos from the early 2010s about electric cars, from what people were looking, what their experience was of that time. And you think, my God, how far we've come in 14 years. We've known that we've got another long period of time to wait until it has to become. Think how far. I'm just quite an optimist in that sort of aspect. I don't just judge it based on what I've heard. It does. Some people don't look how far we've come. If that makes sense. So
yeah, we have. The thing that I would always remind people is that, you know, I'm very lucky to have been exposed to the brilliance of the car industry globally, and there are some incredibly talented people there. You know, I was talking to one senior engineer from the Volkswagen Group yesterday. What an incredible brain this guy has, and I've got no doubt that the combined brilliance and the brain power of the automotive industry is going to get electric vehicles to where they need to be, well, in very short order. You know, we're seeing huge strides being made. You know, everybody's talking about solid state batteries not being too far away. They'll potentially be a game changer in terms of charging speeds and range as well. But it's also the education piece that we as the media have got to play a part in telling people how they can be using electric cars. And it's not a one size fits all, in the same way that, you know, you might decide you want a 5-litre V8 or do you want a 1.23 cylinder? You know, what sort of battery do you need? What sort of journeys are you going to go on? Can you live with a car that has a 200-mile range? You know, I'm thinking about our household. We could quite easily live with that.
Yeah.
You know, it's part of the mix. And we're lucky enough to have off-street parking and a charging point. So absolutely, we could do that. And then when I drive to Liverpool and back, I've got a lovely diesel Skoda Yeti that I use for that. I wouldn't take an electric car on that journey because I don't want to have to sort of play the gamble of charging somewhere on the way home. So it's horses for courses. A lot of people will buy an electric car thinking, oh, it'll be our second car. And very soon it becomes their first car that they use most of the time.
Yeah.
And the old internal combustion engine car they just use on high days and holidays.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm just looking forward to see what happens, basically, because, as I said, just on how far we've come in the last decade. So,
yeah, and there's further to go. And so the point I was going to make is that whenever the car industry gets involved with battery technology and things like that, it's a huge business, and you'll see a rapid explosion in technology. Mm-hmm. And the pace of change will happen so quickly because that's what the car industry does.
Mm. And that leads me on nicely into how people are buying cars as well, because that's changed a lot. So some of the reporting that based on how many cars are sold, there's always a big asterisk on, oh, these were fleet sales, these don't count. But people are leasing cars a lot now. And is that, do you think that's changed how people associate themselves with their car? They don't own them anymore, or they borrow them for a period of time? Or
yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You know, we don't necessarily have the close relationship with our cars that we used to. We're likely to lease them for 2 or 3 years, whether that's on a straight personal lease or a PCP. Clearly, there's some issues around PCPs and finance selling and things like that at the moment. You know, personally, as a family, we lease a car. We lease it for 2 years. We enjoy it for 2 years. You know, I look around for the bargains. as a lot of people do. You know, don't necessarily buy the car you'd really love, but you buy one and you think, oh, wow, that's great at that price. And we've got a great car that is very affordable on lease. And we'll run it for 2 years and we'll do move into something else, which is quite nice because you're then always running a new car with the latest technology and you get to change it every couple of years. And as we all do when we're budgeting, whether it's our mobile phone or our broadband or our Netflix subscription or whatever, you know, we budget certain amounts each month for various pockets of expenditure. And that's what increasingly we're doing with cars.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think maybe people that are looking to learn to drive in the next year or two, they might have a different relationship to what you've had and what I've had in terms of owning a car and buying it. They might just not even want a car. I've come across people who don't even want one. So it's, yeah, I think the car industry is maybe that might worry them in the future. They've got to do a little bit more to sort of get people, younger people back into cars, I think. I don't know if that's a concern.
Yeah, I think human nature is always that there is a desire to travel and to be mobile and to explore. And not everybody lives in a big city. Not everybody is lucky enough to live somewhere where they can rely on public transport or cabs or whatever. You know, that's only a proportion of the population and certainly not everybody. And equally, at a certain sort of life stages that you get to, cars are really useful. You know, when you start settling down, if we can use that phrase, if you start building a family around you, then you know, getting a family onto to public transport. You know, I live what 22 miles or something like that outside London, in a little village in Buckinghamshire, and if I wanted to get to Heathrow Airport, for example, I've got to walk half a mile to the nearest bus stop. I've no idea when a bus is likely to come along, get that bus into somewhere like Uxbridge, get a train in towards London and then back out to, you know, it's going to probably take me, I think I checked at one stage, an hour and a half to 2 hours. In a car, he throws 20, 25 minutes away. Now, if I've got a whole family going on holiday, the last thing we really want to do is to start our holiday walking down to the bus stop or okay, we could get a cab, but then getting a cab, trust me, is more expensive to and from the airport. Anyway, you know, you go through these processes and all of a sudden the private car is quite useful. Now you might say, well, I'm not going to use it every day, but you know, you do use cars quite a lot, and having the convenience of having something that is parked outside your house or close to your house that is yours, you're going to get into. There isn't somebody else's empty crisp packet and no smudge on the window. Your own private personal transport is something that is very appealing to, and it's part of human nature to have something that is yours and convenient and comfortable. And you know, I think there's life in the car yet. There may be different ownership methods. We're already seeing private leasing. You know, subscription for me is, it depends what the definition of subscription is. What we do know is people don't seem to like the packaged options, bizarrely, because you'd think that would be really convenient. But I think people look at it and think, wow, that's just one big expensive amount of cash. And if I were to do all the individual parts myself, I could probably get it cheaper. And they're probably right. So, you know, undoubtedly it will change, and people are absolutely right to question. And there are environmental issues around things as well. But there's life and convenience and fun and flexibility and exploration that a car can bring that is difficult to get from public transport.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm not too far away from the cafe machine locations, and just visiting those on a weekday night or a weekend, you sort of see the car culture come alive, and you think, right, people, you sort of get this confirmation that people are still interested in that whole side of it, which is really good. So.
Yeah, I think we need to be honest and say that the dyed-in-the-wool enthusiasts, the people that, you know, I used to be sort of underneath my car every weekend and doing things like that, they're probably not a growing force these days, but there's still plenty of them out there. But people still love cars. They love what cars do. They love what they say about them. They love the engineering behind them. But more than anything, they love the freedom that a car gives you.
Yeah, 100%. Definitely agree. Just before we wrap up, have you got any advice for anyone looking to get into either motoring journalism or even doing a little dabbling with motoring videos as well on YouTube, possibly.
Yeah, I think what I said earlier on is important.
Yep.
You know, you've got to mark yourself. There are loads of people out there who want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I still get contacted by people saying, how do I get into automotive journalism? And I've written a two-pager that gives people a few tips. But by and large, it's about showing a bit of initiative. And these days, it is relatively easy to build yourself a website, to start creating content, to start being very active on social media, to start creating some videos. But you know what you've got to do is make yourself different and make yourself stand out. Now, whether that's just through sheer quality, or just finding a point of difference about your presenting style or the content that you're focusing on, you've got to be different from the rest, because, as I say, there are no end of people. Sadly, normally guys who are of a certain age who just stand in front of cars and say, this is the car XYZ, you know, just do something a bit different, just shake it up a little bit, just change the way you present things, change the way you speak, change the way you do your edits, just to make yourself a bit different, and you'll find things that people actually like. So, you know, my best advice is get out there, start creating content. There are still great things to be done if you can be attached to a big brand, because whether it's Evo or Auto Express or Whatcar or Autocar or electrifying.com, you know, titles like that, you know, they have a huge amount of trust and they have a huge audience as well. And more than anything, they're great places to learn about journalism, because journalism is important. Journalism is about being able to create content and tell a story, but most importantly, to understand what the person at the other end of the camera or the other side of the screen, what they want, and answering the questions that they're asking and providing them with information or entertainment that they want.
Yeah, 100%. And the one thing I would add as well is that try not to think too much about the first video maker or the first thing you write as well. Just one thing that I've learned from people that I spoke to on this podcast is that just don't think about what you just do it, if that makes sense.
First of all, get out there and do it. And be your own worst critic. Don't listen to the haters. Otherwise, you know, it's very easy. The keyboard cowards, as I call them, it's very easy to be negative. Have fun with it. Because if you ain't having fun, sure as eggs are eggs, the audience won't be having fun. So get out there, you're right, start, have a go, be your own worst critic. Your 10th video will be better than your first, your 100th video will be better than your 10th. So keep going, keep trying to improve, keep trying to be different, and keep in mind the audience and what they want.
Awesome, yes, good advice. If people want to find out more about you and what you do and where all your content is produced, where can they find you on the internet?
I always say I'm an easy guy to find. I'm on X quite a lot. Not allowed to say Twitter anymore, but you know, what you do, you don't tweet on it. You post on X, I suppose, don't you?
Yeah.
I dabble in Instagram a little bit, but just I find Instagram quite hard work and quite time consuming. So I'm there, but you can see me on my website, stevefowler.co.uk. I'll be popping up on electrifying.com as well. Still lots of content from Auto Express and various other titles I've been. I'm an easy guy to find, and I'd love to hear from you.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks everyone for listening to this podcast or watching it on YouTube as well. Thank you, Steve, for joining me. You can find The Interface at theinterface.uk. My name's Alex, and we'll see you again next time.